24/7 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. It is Thursday, November 14th, a very rainy day here in the South. I hope you're having a great day and staying dry. I have a fantastic show for you today. First up, we have Wayne Elliott, our favorite Canadian environmentalist, is with us again to talk about his incredible entrepreneurial career and the things he's done for the environment. And we're going to talk a little bit about recessions and how to battle through those and how to survive during the hard times. And so I'm excited to speak with Wayne about that. After that, we have the executive producer of one of the more important movies that's come out in a long time, The Sound of Freedom. Their producer, Paul Hutchinson, is with us. This is the movie that's about sex trafficking in the United States. It is so important that we tackle this as a society. There's nothing worse than our young kids getting stolen and put into these horrible sex slave type situations. Paul has rescued hundreds of these poor women, girls, and made a movie about it. The movie, I think it's the number one documentary maybe of all time or something like that. I think it's made several hundred million dollars, which documentaries don't do. So anyway, we will talk with Paul. It is an incredible story. On the show tomorrow, we have an incredible guest, a woman who during her MBA program read about an esoteric technology. She's like, well, that should be a business, and is now making the world a better place and saving the environment with her incredible better plastics. And so we'll talk about that tomorrow. And we're going to talk about tariffs. Are all of Trump's ideas for changing our tax code and switching to tariffs a good idea? We'll talk about that tomorrow as well. Thanks for being with us. We're going to get started with Wayne in just a second. Bye, bye, bye. We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. I'm very excited now to welcome back to the show our favorite guest, Wayne Elliott. Very interesting career. Started off in the ship recycling business. Eventually that turned into battery recycling and now body recycling at Strauss Naturals, where he can help keep you alive with an incredible selection of health products. Wayne, welcome back. Good to talk to you today. How are you doing today?
I'm just fine. Thanks, Jim. Good to be with you.
A long career, some, I'm doing the math now, 55 years that you've been doing this, approximately. How many recessions you been through?
I was through the one in the early 70s, the early 80s, and the 90s. I actually, my dad and I, and a couple of partners, started a company in 1973 to recycle ships here in Southern Ontario. And one of the partners had a suitable facility we were going to use. And when that recession hit, and it was I maybe found it the toughest, the 70s recession and the 80s were both very tough, especially just starting out. And actually, we did not recycle any ships in 73, Jim, because the Transport Canada gave the ship owners an extra year. Ships have to go on dry dock every 5 years for what's called a five-year survey. They do things like pull the propeller, the tail shaft, all the sea valves. And they gave extensions of 1 year because business was so tough there in the early 70s. So we didn't start ship breaking. Instead, I tried to get into the scrap metal business and plugged along and tried to make a living that way. But it was the 70s, and it seemed to last a while. And then in 1974, the scrap prices of scrap steel and scrap copper went to historical highs. And that year, we in Charleston, South Carolina, recycled the submarine, the USS Barracuda. And it was much easier with decent prices. There's enough spread there to get your bills paid, you know, cover your costs and try and make a profit. But recessions can be very difficult. I guess the only decent part for those still working is the prices generally do come down for goods, unlike today with this inflation and very high prices. So, but it's quite a challenge, and I just remember every day, you know, was just a slugfest, and it seemed to me, not that I was the smartest guy in the world, but it seemed to me it was just such a challenge to make a living.
Yes, and even a challenge to get in line to buy gas. What are your thoughts on advice on how to survive a recession? What do you think the best way to do to get through it is?
Well, the one thing, you know, when I've been, I'm a worrier to start with, Jim, but I have been worried with the economists. They don't always agree, but they were generally agreeing around the world a few years ago that a very deep, long-lasting recession was imminent. And they said the worst in 50 years. So, you know, they were including the 70s, 80s, and 90s recessions. And, you know, there's some real dangers. For example, you buy a house, the prices are very high in Canada. Have been for a few years now, very, very high. Real estate doubled and then more than doubled. So you get into a mortgage on a home, a piece of real estate, and come mortgage renewal time, which is generally 3 to 5 years, the house or the property can be worth less, of course, than what you paid for it. And that can be a real problem because, first of all, you could, after your down payment and the 4 or 5 years of payments that you've made, it could be cheaper to buy the house next door than to remortgage your own. You know, so that's difficult. This happened in Toronto. It was quite a thing when they, you know, people's mortgages came due, and yet similar houses were cheaper by $100,000 or more. So I think it's especially a dangerous time now with people having to reach and pay these tremendous prices for homes and big mortgages. And of course, in Canada, I'm not sure how it works in the United States. In Canada, over some real financial troubles years ago, where you needed just 10% down to buy a home, that has now switched to 20%. And so if you bought a home worth, just to use round figures, $500,000, you wouldn't buy much of a home in Canada for $500,000 in most places today. But let's just say that that's what you pay today, $500,000. And when your mortgage comes due for renewal, let's just say that the housing prices had dropped 20%, and now your home was worth $400,000. Well, you'll need to ante up again that 20% payment, because the first 20% down payment that you made, your house dropped in value by the 20%. So, and there's only so many people that would be able to pony up. So in a $400,000 mortgage, you'd have to come up with another $80,000. And, you know, the young people are in an awful boat up here to try and get themselves a home. But that's, you know, that's one of the dangers. History repeat itself again and have to ante up again. And it has to be difficult if you're going to remortgage, and yet the house next door, just figuratively speaking, you could buy for cheaper than remortgaging your own. So, I mean, that's one of the serious risks with recessions. Jobs, you know, historically, lots of people have been laid off during recessions. Business is slower. So there's many sides to it, really. And I don't know how COVID could have helped us avoid a recession with the mega billions or trillions of dollars that governments around the world spent during COVID. I don't understand how that could have helped or improved the situation. So I had an interesting guest on the radio show from the United States, an 82 or 83-year-old financial analyst. And he was saying that in Canada, especially because the real estate market was an anomaly, Canada went like no other country for higher prices. He said that, and the same with the stock market, which today the Dow Jones is over 40,000. He said, what most people don't know is that in 1929, in the stock market crash, it actually took until 1954, many years, decades later, for the prices to get what they were in 1929 before the crash. He said, the same will happen this time. He said, people are not paying attention to the portfolios. And he said in the housing end of things, these people who buy homes for investments and want to flip them and make some money, there's been a lot of that go on. He said when prices drop 10%, these folks that's what they do, they're going to jump in and buy more real estate. He said it will be a mistake when they do, because 10% is not, it's not going to be limited to a 10% drop. And it'll be a long time coming back. And I don't think most people know that about the stock market when it did crash in 1929. That's almost 100 years ago, that it took till 1954 to get back to 900. Well, in the last 4 years, it has more than doubled. And I can't understand, Jim, how those bricks and mortar industries and businesses are worth double in the last 4 years. I mean, I understand it if your business has grown to that extent. But I don't know. I don't own any stocks, and I'd be very nervous if I did today. He suggested, this gentleman did, that a couple of years ago, it's a good time to start cashing out. And he said that gold, you know, I thought that he was mistaken. He said the best investments were gold and silver, and the second best were cryptocurrencies. And that one really surprised me. And I wanted to do it, wanted to buy a Bitcoin, and I was just too nervous. Well, in less than a year, the price of Bitcoin's almost tripled. It's $100,000 Canadian dollars for a Bitcoin now. It was $34,000 when I looked at it. And gold, since he told me that, has gone from $1,700 an ounce to almost $2,800 an ounce. So, anyway, the recessions are dangerous and can be nasty in many ways, and folks losing jobs, that never helps. And I've been through three of them, and I you know, in my opinion, the 70s was tough. The early 80s recession, the price of scrap metal got so low, you could hardly handle it and pay your bills. So it's difficult times, different depending on the business that you're in, of course.
And as you said, the analysts have been telling us for a long time that there was a recession coming, and it never happened. And maybe Biden did a great job, and that's why. What do you think's going to happen? So as we record this, it's the morning of the election day. We record this on Tuesday. What do you think's going to happen, regardless of who wins, or do you think that it matters who wins in terms of the economy? Where do you think the economy is headed right now? It seems so weird. Some sectors feel like they're in a recession. Tech is in a recession, I think, because my wife is there and we feel it, but other sectors are not. Well, what do you think? Where do you feel it's going, Wayne?
Well, I know this much, Jim, that like every wave out in the Great Lakes or in the ocean, every wave breaks. And, you know, I believe that, you know, the old expression, what goes up must come down and all that kind of thing, that, yeah, I don't really see how we can avoid. I'm no economist, that's for sure, but I don't really see how we can avoid a recession. Debt is just so high. Personal, corporate, and sovereign debt has never been anything close to what it is today. You know, the entire world, not every individual, but individuals, corporations, and governments are just in tremendous amount of debt. And, you know, in my world, I've been taught that all of that has to be repaid. You must pay your debts. And I don't know how they could manage it in this world today. It's when we went off the gold standard, back when gold was about $32 an ounce, I personally believe it was a mistake, because you can print money and you can say that's a $100 bill because it says 100 on it, but it's really just a piece of paper. And if it isn't backed with anything like it used to be with gold, it's just paper. We're just trading paper. And that's, I think when I started, again, I'm no expert at cryptocurrency either, but it kind of made sense to me. I thought it was real hocus pocus, this coin. You don't even get the coin. You don't get a coin to have a virtual coin. And one of my friends said to me, well, if you think about it, a $20 bill is worth $20 because we say it is. Otherwise, it's just a piece of paper that you could light your fireplace with. And that's true. So I sure don't like it. I'm a worrier anyway, Jim. But yeah, I'm nervous of the outlook. And, you know, people can get themselves in a real jackpot. Timing, you know, as they say, is everything. And I know people are anxious to get themselves homes and starting a business, but boy, I started a business in the middle of recession 51 years ago, and it was tough. It was tough sledding, very tough sledding. And so it's tough to give someone advice about what to do. But what happens when you're in business is you look at everywhere that you can cut. When business is good, we tend to, yes, approve this, approve that. Well, when the tough times come, just like in a household, you need to look at where can we save? Where can we cut back? What can we cut back at the grocery store? Let's be really conscious of our heating costs. You know, people, the price of fuel these days, I think there's a heck of a lot less people going for Sunday drives, Jim. Price of gasoline is tremendous in Canada. High test premium gas is basically $10 a gallon. So it's I have a pickup truck with a good sized tank on it, but it's $200 to fill that tank. So it's very expensive, and I feel worse for the young people that are starting out and trying to make a life, get a home. Very difficult today. Look at the price of vehicles. I suppose a recession, as I said, if you have a good job and you keep it and prices come down, well, there can be benefits. You buy a house cheaper and things cost less, but the folks that lose their jobs, of course, that's never a good thing. So that's about all I got to say on that. It can make things very difficult in a business, and people really want to have their eyes wide open today in business and going into business. They talk about some businesses are recession-proof, but I don't know about that, Jim.
Well, COVID, I think, proved that not to be true. You know, you look at owning rental properties, for example, and thought, well, that's a safe business. There's nothing, you know, that could really come in and hurt you there. And then the government says, well, you don't have to pay your rent this year. And all of the people who thought they were in very safe positions owning property all of a sudden weren't. And so, yeah, it's hard to find anything that I think is recession proof. I think that's a silly statement. So I agree with you there. What industries do you think you would go into now if you were young? What would you try to do now if you were 18?
Well, the healthcare industry is growing, Jim, because every Schedule A disease is on the rise with all our high technology and diagnostic equipment they have today. Overall, we're doing no better with any disease. Every Schedule A disease on the rise. It's a growing business in Canada. We can't get enough doctors, and we keep building new hospitals, and which is a direct cost to the government and everyone else. But so healthcare, daycare. Daycare seems to be a decent business today. What people tell me they're paying to have their children in daycare and pre-kindergarten and so forth. It's just really something. It can take one of the, if the mom and dad are both working, it can take one of those wages to pay for the daycare. So, there are some businesses that that appear to be good businesses today. When COVID was raging, hand sanitizer was a heck of a business to be in, I'll tell you. There was backlogged orders, and those people had a heyday. Masks, those people did very well. Anybody who was in the mask business, but I don't know what's a good business otherwise to be in. And these days, I don't think there's any business that's easy. I really don't. And, people have changed. There's just so many things that have changed. I guess Elon Musk's SpaceX business is pretty good. Apparently the U.S. government is giving them $17 billion worth of contracts, but most of us can't go into the rocket ship business. It's cost prohibitive.
Yes, it is. Very, very true. And the government's also suing him for labor violations. And at the same time, he's a military contractor, so he's not allowed to hire people who are not permanent U.S. residents. But the United States government is suing him because he has not hired enough green card holders, if that makes any sense. He said it. He's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. No matter what, he is in violation of the law because the law is in conflict with itself. And so how do business owners put up with that or understand that? I have no idea. Would you be an entrepreneur again, Wayne, or would you try to go off and go to medical school?
What would I do, you're asking?
Yeah.
Too late for me, but I guess if I could turn the clock back for my own sons, let's face it, Jim, university and further schooling isn't for everyone. I didn't care for it too much myself, so it's not for everyone, and we're always going to need bricklayers and electricians and plumbers and other such trades. Welders. There's really a shortage of the trades in this country. Back when I was young, the television commercials and radio commercials the government put on, they all said to get a good job, get a good education. A BA in this day and age, a college university BA, there's a lot of those folks working in the service industry. I don't want to knock it too much. I mean, it is a university degree, but there are just so many of them. So I think that's something else as well, that young people going to university, you really have to be mindful of what you are going to study, and that there's a good chance of a job, a good job at the end of it. You know, including for teachers. There's been different times where they didn't hire many new teachers, and I have a friend who never did. He's 73 years old now, but he never did get a full-time teaching job after graduating. And back in those days, you didn't need a university degree, but he had one. Went off to teacher's college, and he never did get a full-time job. So, you know, timing is everything, you know, and it's very difficult, and you can't necessarily... You may love the arts, for example, and go to school and study that, but you better hope there's a job for you at the end of it. And so, you know, that's a great question. Knowing myself, and yet university just isn't that difficult. Now, I guess it depends what you're studying. I know engineering is quite difficult. To be a chartered accountant is quite challenging to get through the schooling. I don't know. If I had to do it over again, I'd talk my dad into letting me play baseball. That's one of my regrets in life. I had a chance early on and didn't take it. Me or my back catcher, we're only 16 years old, and our father said no, and that was that. So that's one regret. But in business, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I'd do the same thing again. That's for sure. I've worked, I'll tell you that. I wish I'd got into the natural health business earlier. Jim, the personal rewards, the feel good rewards are wonderful. I love it. And it's always very rewarding if you can help people, even people you don't know or never meet. So I maybe wished I had either started that earlier or been able to stay with it when I got well at age 40, 41. I suppose if I could, I would turn the clock back and at that point stick with that business. The investment was lower. The danger, not the same as ship breaking, the multi-millions in equipment. I've been in some difficult businesses, battery recycling, probably 15 years before I should have. I thought the environmental clock would tick around faster and the rules, but they didn't. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Would have been more fun being a baseball player.
But then sure. You would have had to learn to fly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Well, that was the reason I quit in college, was I just I couldn't handle the thought ahead of time of flying. So That scuttled me for that anyway. And it's even cost me in business, you know, not to be willing to fly or be a regular flyer. That's for sure. I just drove across Canada and back, and that was practical anyway because of the hundreds of stops that we made. It would have been almost the same amount of driving if I had have flown to each province and then zigzagged and drove all over the place.
Wayne, we appreciate you being with us, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Okay, Jim. Thank you.
And we'll be right back. Bye. Welcome back again. Thank you so much for being with us. Very excited to introduce another great guest. Unfortunately, this is a really sad story and a really sad topic, but we have to talk about it. Please welcome Paul Hutchinson to the show. Very successful entrepreneur, sold his first business at the age of 29, helping people deal with depression and bad circumstances in their lives, and started realizing that he needed to give back. One of his mentors pushed him to give even more to charity. And in 2017, due to some circumstances, and we'll ask about this, he gave up his career and decided to work full-time on rescuing children who have been trafficked in some sort of sex situation. He has since then rescued over 70 children. At that point, he had an epiphany. We'll ask about that. And since then, he's rescued, I think, 1,500 or something like that. Paul, welcome. How are you doing?
Good, Jim. It's good to connect with you and your audience and
share some beautiful stories. It's actually 5,000 children that you've now liberated.
Well, yeah, through our foundation and others that I've helped to start and to fund, we've calculated over 7,000 now. And with the movie, The Sound of Freedom, is literally millions and millions of children are in a safer place today because of the efforts of our team.
All right. Amazing story. What was the impetus to change your life and start to focus on this?
Well, Jim, it started, I, like a lot of listeners on this show, has been an entrepreneur for many, many years. I had my first successful company in my early 20s, sold that for $20 million at 29 years old. Most of that was in restricted stock, but enough to start investing. I'm the co-founder of a real estate investment fund, retired just under $20 billion with a B in assets under management. Since that time, that organization's gone public on this New York Stock Exchange. But I retired in 2017 to focus full time on philanthropy. In fact, if you saw the movie Sound of Freedom, I'm the executive producer and the primary investor in that film. And my very first rescue was in Colombia, one of the ones that was highlighted in the film. I was the one that Jim Caviezel's like, if I could get Pablo to get on board, we can make this happen. Well, I'm Pablo in real life. I'm the wealthy guy in the movie who funded the entire operation and then retired to go and do undercover missions to help rescue the kids.
Unbelievable. What was the first one like?
Well, the first one was... The first operation was about 10 years ago when I had I got a phone call from the attorney general in Utah. And he said, Paul, he said, I know that you've donated a lot of money to charity and to child related charities in particular. He said, but I need to talk to you about something that's pretty dark. It's the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world. And good people don't even know that it's happening. He said, I'm talking about trafficking, human trafficking, and in particular in child trafficking. He said, there's a Homeland Security agent who's identified a bunch of children that have been taken and are being trafficked in Latin America. And he needed about $50,000 to rescue those kids. Government at the time wasn't going to give him the money because he couldn't prove there's Americans involved. So we helped to make that happen. And then a few days later, he called me and he said, Paul, he said, I'm here in Colombia. There's not just 20 children in Cartagena. There's more than 50 and there's more than 100 children in the surrounding areas. He said, I believe we could rescue all these children on the same day, but I need your help in a bigger way. And I said, well, how much do you need? He said, I need you. Can you be in Colombia in 2 days? And he said, the head trafficker has a piece of property he wants to develop into a child brothel sex resort. He needs about $8 million to build it out. He believes he can make tens of millions of dollars a year selling children to wealthy Americans. He said, what we need you to fly down here and meet with him and convince him that you're willing to fund his project under one condition. You're going to have a party in a couple of weeks. He's going to call all these other traffickers that he's connected with, get them to bring all their children together. And if you're happy with the inventory that he has access to, then you're willing to fund that project. And so indeed, 2 days later, I'm face to face with the most evil people on the planet selling children and negotiated this deal with them. In fact, I'm sitting there at this table. One of the traffickers leans forward. He goes, Pablo, I have a gift for you. I said, really, what's your gift? And he hands me his phone, and there's a picture of an 11-year-old girl on the phone. He said, this is Princess. She's still a virgin. We just took delivery of some. She's my gift for you for this party. Start talking to these horrific things I could do to this child. And in the movie, The Sound of Freedom, my character, I turned down Jim Caviezel saying, you know, I don't want to go on that. It's too dangerous. And it wasn't until he gave a picture of this child to my driver. And then I looked at this picture of this little girl and I thought, wow. And that convinced me to go. In real life, I was already there. I was face to face with these traffickers. And but him showing me that picture of that child galvanized my commitment. And I decided I would help fund whatever needed to happen to ensure the safety of those children.
And this was the Attorney General of the state. Did I catch that detail correctly?
No, originally the phone call that I received in the beginning was my good friend who became the AG later. This was even before he became the Attorney General, but he was connected with some guys with Homeland Security, et cetera. I have since broken ties with that Homeland Security agent. We served together for about 5 years in doing missions. I helped with his foundation, but we separated. That character that Jim Caviezel loosely plays in the movie, we separated about 5 years ago. We started the Child Liberation Foundation, which identifies and helps to rescue kidnapped and trafficked children, but more importantly on the rehabilitation side now. But yes, there was a Homeland Security agent who was in Colombia that was the one that called me that had helped put that operation together. And the thing that changed my life the most, Jim.
This is so irrelevant, Paul, but it came to mind, so I'm going to ask. Sure. What about the legality of your missions? They sound kind of extra legal. Another way of saying
actually, in every single operation that we did, the beginning meetings were with the head of the federal police or the president of the country saying, listen, we will work under your laws. We will pay for everything. We will do all the work. We will give you all the credit. Your people think you're heroes. All we ask is that the bad guys stay in jail for good. They don't get around your system. Number two, we have full access to the children getting rehabilitated and back to their families. So, you know, in the past, a lot of our federal agents that we worked with, they would go into a country like that and they would kind of butt heads with a foreign agency saying, hey, you know, we want to help with trafficking. No, this is our problem. This is our situation, et cetera. Now, it's that. As a private organization, a 501c3 in the U.S., we could go in and say, no, we will work under your laws. We will work for you, so to speak. And so, no, we're not going in as Rambos. We're working very closely with the federal agents in each of these countries. And since that time, some of the numbers to correct on the intro, I have led or played a key part in over 70 undercover missions in 15 countries since that time. And so, and I stayed undercover for 10 years doing those operations. It wasn't until just a few months before the movie came out that I did my first public appearance and started doing podcasts to create awareness. And I think we've helped many more children in creating awareness than we ever did in doing the undercover missions.
All right. Where did the children come from? Are they kidnapped off the streets? Are they, you know, I just can't perceive of this. I have never experienced or heard of a kid in my neighborhood or, you know, so it's just, this is so far from reality. And Paul, it's weird. I live in Atlanta and a lot of the flights that come in and out of Atlanta now tell you that Atlanta is one of the most sex trafficking centers in the United States and to watch out for it. I don't know what to watch out for. The last time I heard that, I was traveling alone with my younger daughter. And so we looked like we were sex trafficking, you know. Where do the girls come from in the first place?
Yeah, it's an important question because, you know, a misperception is that the majority of trafficking is a healthy family where a child is taken. And, you know, even in the movie Sound of Freedom, yes, those things happen, but it's very uncommon that a healthy family will have a child taken and put into a container ship and move to another country, etc. The majority of children that are being sex trafficked sleep in their own beds at night. Now, parents are surprised to hear that. The most important thing you can do is you leave a movie like Sound of Freedom and others and you say, oh, I want to do something, or even my book coming out, The Sound of Freedom, that will be coming out within the next month. People will read that and they'll say, okay, what can I do? I want to make a difference. Well, the worst thing you can do is go to Colombia and try to go rescue children. You're going to get shot and you're probably going to get arrested. The best thing you can do is go home and hug your children. And people are like, well, how does hugging my children help? Well, the majority of children that are taken come from broken broken homes or runaways or a broken foster care program. And so doing things to ensure a healthy nucleus within your family, a nuclear family, is incredibly important. But even then, that literally one in every four women who are listening to this radio show today, one in every four have been a victim of sexual abuse as a child in their own homes. Now, yeah, they're not kidnapped. They're not taken to another country. There's roughly somewhere between 8 and 10 million children who are taken, who are abused in these situations where they're being trafficked. But the bigger problem lies in our own neighborhoods, in our own homes, wherein if you walk outside your front door and you look left and you look right, there's a very high chance that one of those homes in your neighborhood is a very dangerous place for children. You need to have a relationship with your children where they can very comfortably come to you and say, "Dad, Mom, I don't like it when you tell me to hug Uncle Harry because he touches me weird and says that we should have secrets outside of you. Or I don't like going to this friend's house because her brother is taking pictures of us when we're changing. And now he says he's going to use those pictures against me at school if I don't do things with him. Or I don't like this babysitter because she's showing us pornography and tells us that we should trust her more than you." These are grooming behaviors. And we need to have a healthy relationship with our children where they know where their boundaries are. They know what's appropriate and what's not, and they're very comfortable in coming to you as a parent and saying when something's not right. Right. And so yes, there's a massive problem. Human trafficking is the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world. Yes, that child trafficking involves somewhere between 8 to 12 million children, but literally 1 billion women on this planet have been a victim of that kind of abuse as a child, most of them in their own homes. And so this is the biggest thing from an awareness standpoint. It wasn't comfortable 2 years ago for us to talk about child trafficking or child abuse on a radio show. It just, you know, people don't want to hear it. But the groundswell of good people stepping forward and saying, "No, we need to know really what's going on. We're tired of Hollywood controlling the narrative," tells us that, yes, this is a subject that parents do want to talk about so that they can proactively do some things to keep their children safe.
How did the movie come about?
Well, we actually took 8 different rescue missions and about 20 different operators and wove those all together into one storyline. We put a lot of focus on just a couple characters. The truth is there's a lot of operators who were involved in those missions and they were in different countries, et cetera, but we wove them all together into one storyline. We knew that we needed millions of people feel what we had felt. And so myself and the Homeland Security agent, we had gone to Sony and Lionsgate and Paramount, and they were super interested in the story, but they wanted to do what Hollywood does best and just kind of change the narrative to their own liking. And that's not what we wanted. We wanted the truth to come out to the American people and to the rest of the world. And so I decided to be the primary investor, and we decided to bring this movie to the people by the people. And so as the primary investor, we had a team of writers. I actually met some of these guys at a Grammys after party called Rock Against Child Trafficking in Los Angeles, brought them together at my family cabin. We wrote the script, put all that together. And then we finished the film more than 5 years before we had distribution. We were cut off everywhere. Big Hollywood, big media did not want to have this story public because they didn't want us having these conversations, because unfortunately there's a lot of those guys who are involved. And, we've seen that with the P. Diddy case. We've seen this with the Epstein case. There's a lot of very high profile, powerful people that are involved in some horrendous things.
Really? You hear those rumors, Paul, there's real truth to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. And you know, the challenge is, you know, we sit back and think that something like Epstein was his doing and it was his master. He wasn't the mastermind behind that. Let me just kind of put it this way. And, you know, we've had this powerful sweep across the country and good people, conservatives coming forward and saying, no, we need to clean up the corruption here. The truth is this. There's agencies that have been controlling the votes for a long, long time and controlling our politicians for a long time. If you want to control the decisions of a senator, of a congressman, of a federal judge, if you want to control their votes forever, you get them in a compromising position. You get that kind of blackmail on them. You get a video of them on a jet, on an island with a 13-year-old. You control that vote forever. And even the P. Diddy case, the most valuable thing that the agencies picked up was those videos so that they could have that level of control. And sadly, a lot of those people aren't being put in jail, because if they did, we would have to vote a whole bunch of new people into office, and then they would have to corrupt a bunch of more people in order to control them. It's sad, but that's how the system works. And indeed, the reason why I was recruited to do a lot of this undercover work is because of the fact that I came from a very, very successful entrepreneurial background. And a lot of the guys who were going down that were paying for these parties with these children in third world countries were wealthy businessmen from first world countries. And so these traffickers were used to somebody coming down with a $50,000 watch and a nice suit and an ego and lots of money. And so that's what was pulling together the connections with all of these high level traffickers.
Why are these other celebrities not coming out and not being arrested? I don't know if they'll arrest P. Diddy. Why won't they arrest whoever?
Well, the real question is, why didn't they arrest P. Diddy 15 years ago? This has been going on for a long time, and a lot of people knew that it was going on for a long time. And sadly, it wasn't until it had to be made a public situation where his, you know, there's videos of his wife, him beating his former wife in the elevator. There was a bunch of stories that were coming out, and it was too much information in the public hands for the feds not to do something about it. But the truth is, he's been doing these freak off parties for well over a decade, and everybody knew about him. And of course, there's three-letter agencies that knew all about that crap that was going on. But unfortunately, there was other things that were on their agenda at the time. And so, sadly, all we have to do is look at who's been at those parties. You know, I used to be a big fan of guys like Will Smith. I loved him as an actor. But then I started realizing how he was behaving in his personal life. You know, why his first wife left him, why his second wife left him, why, you know, who they walked in on him with in their bedrooms, and what kind of parties he was at, and who was at those parties, and what the age of those people. You start late taking a look at that, you're going to change the people who you see as your mentors in your life, and those people you see as heroes.
Yes. You know, you, in today's world of lies and misinformation, I hear those sort of stories and I immediately dismiss them, because if they were true, my assumption is the person would already be arrested.
Yeah. That would be an ideal world. And hopefully with some of the new people coming in, we're going to clean up the swamp a little bit. But the reality is they've been out there doing this stuff for a long, long time. We need to hold our law enforcement accountable and say, no, we need to go in and make these arrests. We need to put these are the real predators, you know, not somebody that's walking around with you know, more cannabis in their pocket than they have a card for. You know, the real criminals are the ones who are raping the children. The real criminals are the ones who are using their power and influence to have these freak off parties and having sex trafficking right underneath our noses.
Do you think that another layer of information will come out because of the P. Diddy case?
I would hope so. I would hope that this doesn't go away, that we as a public demand to have those lists be made public, and that the people that were at his parties be made public, just as we should continue to demand that we get the lists of everybody who was involved with the Epstein Islands.
Yes, that is a horrible situation as well. Any thoughts on whether he actually killed himself or not?
I think anybody knows, anybody with a brain knows he didn't really kill himself. You know, he was getting ready to go public with information that people didn't want him to go public with. There's no way that he committed suicide. And yeah, there was way too many very, very powerful people that were behind this entire operation and people that he had information on that that didn't want him talking.
Well, I hope it all comes
another theory on the side is that he's not actually dead. So there's another theory that we can go into depth on that in a whole other show.
Well, is he living with Paul? I mean, not Paul, John Lennon?
Probably.
Or is Elvis? Which one is he with?
Elvis. Yeah, they're all hanging out together. They're with, Yeah, there's a lot of people that decided, you know what, I'm tired of this life. I'm going to just kind of disappear for a while.
You know, I hate the conspiracy theories, but then you watch some of them. For example, I watched the Finding Hitler. The presumption was that he made it to South America. The case was pretty convincing, you know? And so, and with Kennedy as well, who killed Kennedy, I think that that's clear as well, that the Secret Service, there was an agent in the car behind Kennedy, and he fired a gun or by mistake out of shock. And I think that was the kill bullet. And I think that's been well proven now, and no one really talks about that either. So
absolutely. You know, and I'm hoping, you know, I'm friends with RFK, and I'm hoping that a lot of the details of that are made public in the next few months as well. You know, so yeah, a lot of these conspiracies, you end up in the end finding out that more of them are true than what we imagined. So and it's the same thing with this. This is the reason why big Hollywood and media didn't want this stuff out. People are like, oh, you know, there is not trafficking going on. I have seen it, Jim. I have been there. I have been there in 15 countries on the ground. I've seen trafficking going on. It's an important issue that we as Americans need to step forward and say, no, this is not going to happen. We're not going to be the largest producer and consumer of child pornography in the world. We're not going to be the ones who are traveling around to engage in these horrible activities with children. We're going to clean up our country. And it starts in our own homes.
Paul, how do we find out more and help?
You can go to soundoffreedombook.com. It'll take you right into Liberating Humanity webpage. You can get help, free stuff there on how to keep your kids safe. You can pre-order the book as well. Should be out any day. It's finished. The publishers are just putting some final touches on the cover and whatnot. Or you can find anywhere online. Just type in Liberating Humanity on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook, anywhere else. Just type in Liberating Humanity and you can get some more information on things you can do to keep your kids safe. But more importantly, things that we can do as adults to heal from our own childhood trauma so that we don't end up passing that trauma on to our kids in any way, shape, or form. So we talk about on some of those pages, the healing retreats that we host throughout Latin America, the different tools that we use to help people completely release all of those negative thoughts, emotions, and energies that could very well transfer into challenges within their own homes as well. So yeah, go to liberatinghumanity.com or look up Liberating Humanity on any of the social media.
Paul, thank you so much for being with us. It's an amazing story of what you've done, and Godspeed to you.
I'm super grateful. Thank you. Thank you for your time today, Jim. Grateful to be with you and your audience.
Well, you are very welcome. Thanks for being with us. We're out of time. Have a great day. Be safe, everyone. See you tomorrow. Bye now.